The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show. Hey everyone, welcome to the big show, Your Money with David Hayes. Had a week off last week with spring break. I don't have a child in school any longer, but it's hard to break old habits, especially when March rolls around and the town of Bloomington goes empty. It's hard not to find your way to a nice beach in Florida. And I wasn't the only one. The beaches in Florida were packed. People were traveling. It was incredible. Now, I traveled last year as well. I know a lot of you did not, but I did, and it was nice to be in Florida, even in 2021, and even in 2020, a little bit here and there, but not much in 2020. And to see people just absolutely back to 100% normal down there was fantastic. So we had a great time. Hope all of you had a good week as well. Didn't even keep tabs on what was happening up here weather-wise, certainly keeping tabs on what's happening in the markets and the Fed and all of that. That never takes a break. And Rod will be joining us in a few minutes to talk about where we stand on things today. Here we get ready to wrap up quarter number one. And believe it or not, I did a video on this prior to the big blow up in the Now I sound like politicians in Ukraine. And talked about, you know, when we have geopolitical events like this, and I went back and we studied well over 20 different events and how markets were affected. Well, I just got this from By the Numbers. The S&P is actually up 4.2% since the Russian invasion in Ukraine. Now, that doesn't mean what's happening over there isn't absolutely horrifying at all kinds of levels, but from a market perspective, we always try to keep things in perspective for you. The NASDAQ closed at an all-time high of 16,057 on Friday. That's back in November of 2021. In the 4 months since, the tech-oriented index has fallen 21%. So what goes up must come down. It closed at 12,581 last Monday. And, you know, when you look at the NASDAQ, it is what it is. You get the good and you get the bad, and it's usually one of the more volatile indexes. Rod and I were talking before I came up to the radio station today about, you know, whenever this is up, this is down. When this is up, this is down. It seems to be kind of a crazy time right now. You know, in the last 10 years, 2020 was the 10th year in the last 72 years that the economy actually contracted. So 10 out of 72, that's not too bad. But 8 out of 10 times, we had pretty solid growth afterwards, including the 5.7% growth we saw in 2021. It was painful, but they did it. The Federal Reserve increased short-term interest rates last Wednesday to a target of 0.25 to 0.5%. Here's the thing to keep in mind, folks. That is nothing. Zero. Nothing. Nothing even hard to talk about. Because back in 1979, I was 9 years old, to March of 1980, the Fed actually raised the federal funds rate from 11% to 20% to eradicate the double-digit inflation the U.S. was experiencing at the time. Do you think folks are borrowing too much? I don't know. I've told people since day one, this real estate thing will start to cool down when interest rates go up, because when rates go up, you can borrow less. You go into the bank, they say, oh yeah, based on your debt-to-income ratio, you can borrow all this money. Well, then that's more house you can buy. Well, American lenders repossessed 7,400 homes during the first 2 months of 2022. That's up 150% over the 2,900 repossessions that took place in the first 2 months of 2021. And I don't think there was any kind of moratorium on repos in the first 2 months of 2021, but I could be wrong. I know that that was with evictions and all that stuff for a while, but I don't honestly know. All right, here is my passion, right? 10 U.S. states have enacted legislation to provide auto IRA pre-tax retirement accounts for private sector workers who are employed by businesses that do not provide retirement plan options. Those 10 states, well, you can look them up, but they are California, Colorado, Connecticut, Illinois, Maine, Maryland, New Jersey, New York, Oregon, and Virginia. You see kind of a theme that way, I guess, just a little bit. I think that everyone should have auto enroll in their 401ks. Many of them do, thankfully, but it's too low. The other disservice they do is when you come on, they not only auto-enroll you, if that's an option, at 3% or some level of their match, but they always put you in the tax-deferred side. Most of these young workers coming on, they need to go in the Roth side, not the traditional side, and that's a disservice. But hopefully over the next few years, we'll get this thing righted where everybody who offers a 401k or a 403b has auto-enroll, maybe even auto escalates, make people go in and turn this stuff off. It's been proven time after time that folks generally do not go in and unenroll. They have trouble enrolling. All right, what's next? 35% of Americans, that's 443 million Americans, have student loans, have less actually than $10,000 of outstanding debt. You would think that, you know, all these people have mountains and mountains of debt. Not everybody. But when you hear the numbers and you break it down, it starts to become a little more easy to swallow. Sick with unpaid bills, 13% of the 23 million Americans with medical debt have more than $10,000 of outstanding medical debt. So there's a lot of people with medical debt and a lot of people with student loans. And then finally, I was actually out west a bit during spring break. 74% of the land in the western United States is in a severe drought, has been forever. And when you look at Lake Mead, which we flew over, I mean, the line where water used to be and where it is to now it's kind of sickening to be honest. All right, since I was in Nevada, let's talk about this. Legal or not, 18 of the U.S. states have legalized the recreational use and sale of marijuana, in spite of the fact that the use and sale of marijuana still remains illegal at the federal level. I was told if you buy that stuff, you have to use a debit card or cash, and then I'm wondering where all that money really goes. There's probably warehouses full of cash somewhere with all this pot money that's out there. Anyway, here in Indiana, still not legal. I'm not sure if it ever will be, but they do sell that other stuff at the convenience stores. I don't really understand it all, but I think they are skating the rules just slightly. That's just my opinion. All right, just having fun this morning or this afternoon. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, let's get Hot Rod on the phone. Let's get caught up on what's been going on and where we stand on things today. Before we left, during last week, and where we are today, it's kind of interesting because I'm hoping that we get a little push, a little rally into the end of the quarter here. And on this Thursday, as we put the show together, it looked to be moving in the right direction. So we'll take a break. We'll be back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. It's Your Money with David Hayes. You know, we started off this year with a lot of uncertainty as we had all kinds of things going on. Of course, inflation, and then we had the Fed, and then we had the Russian-Ukrainian situation going on. And Rod, last week was spring break. Both of us kind of took some time off. You never take some time off keeping your eye on what's happening, of course, in the markets. But before we left, the Fed was getting ready for the first time since 2018 to raise rates, and they did. They signaled it to happen, and they did exactly what they said they were going to happen. And then we had a little bit of a spook where Fed Chairman Powell came out and said, oh, well, we may get a little more aggressive than I first gave you indications, and then the market didn't like that. And then here we are on this Thursday as we record the show, where things seem to be pointing in the right direction again. So just things are up, down, all around, and I'm hoping, as I told you today at the office, I hope we get a little strong push here into the end of the third quarter. It'd sure be nice, at least for the psyche of America.
Yeah, I think so as well. I mean, especially when you start the year out in which January was a negative month and February was a negative month. Yeah, I think psychologically it does a lot of damage if the first quarter itself or even the third month, because I won't say that March will rally enough to get us back to flat or positive for the quarter, but three straight months of negative returns would probably do some psychological damage to the market, especially to the retail investor. You know, the institutional guys who do it on a daily basis, not to say that they don't ever, you know, have to deal with a little bit of fear or greed, the emotion that you try and take out of it kicking in a little bit. But obviously for the retail guy who doesn't deal with it on a daily basis, Monday through Friday, they get up and they go do something different, and then they just check their statements monthly or quarterly or whatever it is. It most certainly would hurt their confidence to see three straight months to start the year negative. So we have eked into a positive territory now for March with last week's rally, and then this week we've had a positive Monday, positive day, Wednesday, negative on Tuesday, currently positive right now as you and I are talking on Thursday. Hopefully we can hold that into the close. And if we can continue this momentum and then start building, because the biggest thing that I had seen, and I told Glass over the last couple of weeks, what you really saw was that people were selling, as I like to call it on the street, they were selling the rip. So every time you got a bounce, sometimes it was intraday that the selling began. Sometimes it would close up for the day and the selling would start the next day. Now it seems as though maybe we're starting to get a little bit more of a buying mentality on some of these dips and some of these sell-offs, and most certainly within some of the stocks and sectors that have been hammered the hardest and probably got into oversold territories in which they came out of overbought and they got way ahead of themselves from a valuation perspective. Now they've probably swung to the opposite side in which they were oversold and probably didn't deserve to have such a low earnings multiple that they now have on them.
You know, and the difficulty was this month, you know, we typically say, hey, rebalance whenever things, you know, go in the other direction. But it's been tough because bond values have been down as well as interest rates have risen. I saw the 10-year around 230, 240 in the room before I left. That's a big move from where we were, you know, quite some time ago.
Yeah, it's about a 50 basis point move in roughly about 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks. So yes, that is. And that usually is a little more unsettling to the market than the actual yield. It's the rate at which the yield got there. So we got there so fast, that does cause issues. But to your point, not only between bond and equities is hitting the rebalance button not great, even with inside of equities. I mean, you look at the sector performance year to date, there's one sector that's positive. It's energy. That's it. Every other sector in the S&P 500 is negative year to date. So it's not as though you have multiple sectors that you can sell your winners to go buy the stuff that is down, sell high, buy low mentality. The only high is energy, and it's up almost 39% year to date versus every other sector negative. Utilities actually has crept into the second best sector at negative 0.77%. It has been the financials because they actually were positive early on, and somewhere this month they flipped to negative, but they're only down 0.86% year to date so far. But yes, that is unusual to be able to look at the market and see that every sector but one is actually negative at this point in the year.
You know, I'm going to do a piece if I have time later on how Americans have had their inflation aha moment. You know, we've heard about inflation, we hear it, but you know, they're actually feeling it now in a lot of different areas. Of course, the gas pump's the most notable, but in a lot of different areas. I stopped for a sandwich at the old Subway today, and I haven't stopped there for a while, but that was 6-inch Black Forest ham on a wheat bread with provolone cheese, tomato, lettuce, and banana peppers, with a little mustard, of course, was about $1.80 more than it was the last time, almost $2 more than the last time that I bought a 6-inch sub. So we're going to talk about that, but let's talk on the area of transitory inflation. When it first happened, everyone's getting sticker shock, nearly 8% inflation. We were like, okay, this is transitory. And you and I both were somewhat in the same camp to say, listen, when the majority of this stuff has to do with wage increase, that's not transitory. That's here to stay. But I was talking with Doug. I said, you know, let's say that inflation calms back down in a couple of years. It gets back down to in the twos or threes. And then 10 years later, you look back and say, yeah, it really was transitory. It was only for a couple of years. But here we stand on this idea that inflation is here. The Fed's wanting to fight it ferociously at some point, which will eventually, as they always do, cause us to go in the wrong direction and go back into a recession. And I think you said it, that you predict that in the next couple of years, maybe three, the Fed's going to be lowering rates again. And I don't doubt that a bit, because we've been doing this for nearly 30 years. We've seen this happen over and over and over. I have a lot of confidence in Chairman Powell and the current Fed, but it seems to happen every single time. The Fed overshoots it, and when they do, it turns this yield curve inverted, and we tend to go the other direction. Now, I'm not saying this to tell people, you know, to do this or do that because of this. I'm just telling folks the reality of it is this is the way these economic cycles work. And the last recession we had was a self-induced economic recession. We did it to ourselves. We said shut down. We went into a recession. We bounced out very, very quickly. And where we stand today, we don't honestly know, because as we always say, we've never been exactly in this spot before, but we certainly can draw on other experiences to give some conclusion to how we think this thing will pan out.
Yeah, most certainly. Well, and I think, you know, one of the sayings that I use quite a bit, especially when we're in a bull market, is that bull markets don't die of old age. Well, the next part of that statement that I don't use as frequently, but it most certainly holds true, is that typically bull markets don't die of old age. They're taken out back and shot by the Fed. And that's probably what's going to happen again this time. That's not because I don't think Jerome Powell is a good Fed chairman. I think he is. I think we've had lots of good Fed chairmen. The task that they are given is almost impossible, and especially from the standpoint, just like where we're at now, people want to see immediate relief within inflation. Well, that 25 basis point increase that was done last week really won't feel the effects within the economy until at the earliest, maybe 6 months, 9 months, maybe even a year out. Even that part of it is a guess. Well, now we're going to put consecutive rate increases on the books more than likely this year. Some are still projecting up to 7 moves this year. Well, if those aren't felt for 6 to 12 months out afterwards, then you're talking about guessing as to the impact of the moves this year that don't impact the market fully for 2 to 3 years. Yeah, they're probably going to overshoot, and they almost always do in both directions. And as I said, that is not a knock on Chairman Powell of not being any good at his job. I think he's done a wonderful job. It's just the nature of that business that it is extremely hard to predict and do, and especially in this particular environment. And this is part that Glass and I've talked a lot about. There is very little that the Fed can truly do for where a lot of the inflation is coming from, and especially the inflation that is causing it to be so high. You know, some of the modest inflation probably was transitory and probably went away. Most certainly wages weren't, but wages were long overdue to play a little bit of catch up, because we hadn't had wage growth in a long time. But the other stuff, the logistics logjam that are reducing supplies but haven't reduced demand at all, that's causing it. The energy thing, which was already an issue before the Russia-Ukraine, which just compounds that. Well, once again, the Fed can't control any of that other than the fact that they raise interest rates to a point to where we no longer have any demand or growth. And we know that that's not the intent, and nobody wants that. You want to modestly move them to reduce growth and demand just a smidge to get that inflation level down. But the reality is they're probably going to have to do it to a point to where all of a sudden it's like, oh, wow, the demand just came out of the economy. We have no growth, which is why I have said don't be surprised if in roughly 2 years we're starting to talk about a possible rate decrease or rate cut to reinvigorate the market and get things moving again.
It's almost like driving down a highway at night with your parking lights on. You know, you can kind of see, but you really can't see very well, and you're going 70 miles an hour, and you know there's a turn at some point that's going to happen, and you start throttling back, throttling back, throttling back, you know, and eventually you get to the point where, well, that curve still's not here, but I'm at a complete stop nearly. So they have that same sort of challenge in front of them as well. I had something on my mind, and it kind of slipped there for a second, but I'll give you this little tidbit, right? I did it in the news of the week earlier in the show. And, you know, here we are sitting at a quarter point, half point, you know, maybe another 4, 5, 6, 7 rate hikes over the next year and a half. But back in 1979 to 1980, the Fed actually raised the federal funds rate from 11% to 20% to eradicate double-digit inflation that the U.S. was experiencing. Of course, they had things completely wrong back then, and then if you had things kind of right themselves in the early 80s, and then we had a pretty decent run, and then we had the roaring 90s. So, and even along those times, you know, I remember 1994, my first year in business, we had a slight recession. So there's recessions along the way, but when you're an investor and you look at the long term, you have to understand you're going to go through those times. And whenever you have times that you can't foresee or predict, you can forecast it's probably going to happen at some point, but the market moves so much on expectations, and you never know how far it's looking ahead. And then it will adjust on reality or new numbers and things like that. You just can't, be in and out, knee in and out based on what you think. In fact, if you go back and look at the split between up and down time periods in the S&P from 1950 to the end of 2021, that's the last 72 years, when you look at days, 54% were up, 46% down. That's days. But when you move to months, it's 61% up, 39% down. When you go to quarters, 67% are up, 33% down. Years, 74% up, 26% down. When you get into a rolling five-year period, nearly 80% are up, 20% down. In 10-year rolling time periods, nearly 90% of the time, 90% of the time they're up, 10% time they are down. So you have to believe in the long-term aspects of the market, and the long-term money is long-term money. Money that you're going to put that pool in, Rod, that should not be in your options account. That should be in the bank account, and that's even someone who's on top of it every single day. Any last comments, Hot Rod, before we let you go?
Yeah, the biggest thing I'd say is, to your point, time is on your side as far as equity investing. So the longer that you can leave those dollars in there, the more likely that you come out ahead in that. And then secondarily, along what you're talking about, you know, you didn't go into the exact specifics of it, but there's always, it's talked about, you know, if you miss just the five best days, the 10 best days,
right,
you know, how much it drops your return. Well, the reality with that is in many circumstances, the best day and the worst days are very close to each other. So it's extremely hard for you to truly miss the worst day of the year and capture the best day of the year, because you would have to be an excellent guesser. Because I'm not going to say that you were a great market technician, that you knew that that's what's going to happen. You guessed it right, because you cannot predict exactly how far out the market is looking. Because normally when the market corrects, it is doing it before things appear to be fixed that caused the sell-off to begin with. No doubt, looking at the 08, I remember our investment committee meetings, that was the big discussion we kept having. The market was starting to take off, and we're like, nothing's fixed. All the problems that are known are still problems. But the market had sought out that a fix was coming, and it would be put in place at some point in the future, and started moving before we actually saw the fixes put in place.
Great point. Great point. And that's why, you know, when I talk about people who are at the helm of helping people guide their way through all of this, it's sure nice to be locked in arm with people that have been through a few battles and have a few scars, because they learned from those things, and it doesn't make you react in an irrational way when things happen. So thanks, Rod, as always. Great job. I'll see you back at the ranch.
Sounds good. Have a great show, Dave.
Let's take a quick break. Have you been listening to any of the podcasts? I put out podcast number 10 on 2025, The Final Drive, What You Need to Know to Win. It'll be out on Monday, but I want to highlight what you have missed if you haven't listened to any of them, and hopefully hook you in. And the more people that listen, the more excited I get, and the more excited I get, the more I want to continue to do it. So that's sort of the perpetual nature of the old podcast. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Thanks so much for listening. If you miss any of the show, catch it on Saturday mornings at 9 a.m., always on WGCOradio.com, and then up on your favorite site to listen to podcasts. You can catch the Your Mo show. But then also, fed into the same stream, is the newest podcast, 2025, The Final Drive, What You Need to Know to Win. Of course, I started that about 2 months ago, and I record one every Tuesday evening in my office, in my little podcast room. I have the little on-air sign. I have the sign on the wall that says, because I know things. It's somewhat You know, it's funny. Actually, if you ever get a chance to come by, check it out. It is fun to come in there and look at the podcast room. But yeah, so I don't know how long I'll do it. I mean, I'm going to continue to cover topics relative to saving money when it comes to taxes, getting out of the crosshairs of higher taxes. But on episode one, that's probably the best episode because it sets the stage. You know, I go through the math problem at hand. I go through how our U.S. tax code has worked in the past. I go through the Comptroller of the United States, David Walker, back in 2008, resigning and crisscrossing America, talking about the fiscal health of America and what we needed to do to fix it. And I flash forward to today and talk about historically low tax rates and what you can do then to get out of the crosshairs of higher taxes. And I thought this was hilarious. I actually didn't bring this up until last week's podcast. But a few weeks ago from By the Numbers, they come out with some information that says this is a bad guess. And it says it's part of a 10-year budget projection. Now, remember, I told you the U.S. thinks in 10-year increments. 10-year increments, and they will pull forward income and push out expenses, and we'll worry about that later. That's how we've gotten this mess that we're in. The Congressional Budget Office back in January of 2012 said our national debt, which was $15.2 trillion at the time, was forecasted to be $21 trillion as of September of 2022, and our actual national debt as of mid-February was $30.036 trillion and growing. So we do miss this a lot. Well, then I get on to episode two and really just kind of explain, you know, what is $1 trillion? Because no one has any idea what $1 trillion really is. And I get into the example of if $1, you know, if $1 trillion, if you break it down to dollars, it would be $1 trillion equals, if $1 equals a day, then $1 trillion equals 32,000 days. $1 trillion, 32,000 days. So it's an enormous amount of money. And then how to move money from taxable to tax-free. I get into Roth IRAs, conversions, Roth 401ks, and planned Roth conversions, how to pay the tax on conversions, how charitable distributions work from IRAs, how much to keep in IRAs. Then in podcast number three, I talk about other ways that taxes could be raised without raising rates. And I go through the federal estate tax roller coaster, how we started at $600,000 when I was first in this business in 1994. We got all the way to $10 million, back to zero in 2010, quickly back to five, now to 11, and it will be coming back to $5 million again-ish, based with a little inflation increases at the end of 2025, when everything gets sunsetted in 2026, back to where it was. Then in podcast four and five, talk about the blitz is on and how longevity risk is something that we have to address and how longevity risk is the great risk multiplier. And what you can do with your money, how you can spend, save, and share it, and also accumulating non-qualified money as a strategy to get ready for retirement. And then podcast five, explain once more about how important it is to have Roth money, especially for married couples, because at some point in your life, you will file a single tax return, either because of death or divorce. And when you are single, you're going to lose a check. Right, you're going to probably lose a Social Security check minimally, maybe part of a pension, and you might need more money at that time. And at that time, your taxes have literally doubled. So your money that you was taxable and everything was cool is now all is taxable, and I'm paying it at a much higher rate. So that's episode number five. Number six, I get into just reminding people, do you pay tax at the lowest cost or the furthest time in the future? And I get into the granddaddy of them all when it comes to retirement income, and that is Social Security, how Social Security is taxed. I went through the different 1983 and 1990 Social Security reforms. I went through different thresholds and how some things made sense, something did not. I went through maximizing Social Security. I went through how they're going to fix the Social Security Trust Fund as well. On to episode number seven. We get into just all kinds of stuff. We get into really dig deep into how to fill the income gap between taking, if you retired at 62, how to fill the gap between that and full retirement age, or potentially even delaying all the way to 70, and giving you some of the math behind that and hopefully encouraging people not to just immediately jump in and take Social Security. Then, in episode 8, I talk about the triple threat, the most tax-efficient vehicle in retirement, and that is the health savings account. Where else can you get a tax deduction going in, grow tax-deferred, and then come out tax-free? Yes, it's called an HSA, and how you can maximize that, not during your working years necessarily, but as a retirement plan, a retirement income vehicle down the road. So we encourage people not to use your HSA, but to save it, invest it, and use it later when you not only can use it for current expenses in retirement, but you can repay yourself for old expenses. So we spend good time, a lot of time in episode number 8. Episode 9, we talked about how you can pay, where do you come up with the money to pay tax on a Roth conversion when you don't have the cash? So that was a really fun episode. If you get a chance, listen to that, because a lot of you I know would say, man, I'd love to do this Roth conversion, but I'm too young to have the taxes withheld because it would consider it a early distribution if you're under 59 and a half. If I do a conversion inside of my 401k, where do I come up with the money? I don't have it sitting in the bank. Someone, I have to pay the tax. Where's it going to come from? So in episode 9, I say, how do you pay the tax on this Roth conversion when you don't have the money? And then this week, there'll be a promo go out about this, but it's how to coordinate both a Roth IRA and a Roth 401k and kind of maximize this. So I'm really speaking to the people who are in their 50s or older and have raised their kids, they're out of the house if they had them, and they're making good money, and it's time to go where they're going to pay down their debts. They're going to save like wild. And I talk about those folks who can really maximize out their 401ks and Roth and how you can do that and all kinds of different tricks of the trade. So that'll be out on Monday evening, and then I'll be recording episode number 11 next Thursday afternoon. It goes through all the hoops and editing and all that, and then it will be out again on Monday. So we have all kinds of things lined up. Some are very specific to certain types of individuals, and then some are more broad in nature. So I hope you enjoy it. They're always short. The first one's the longest one, but after that, they're between 8 and 14 minutes long. You know, we're having a good time with it. Hope you're enjoying it, getting a little education. And then there's a call to action at the end of every podcast. It's, listen, if you want some help navigating these important issues or complicated issues, and you'd like to have a short conversation with someone, you know, please reach out to us and we'll make that happen. So it's just an offer, and if you listen to the podcast, you'll get it. So again, go over to your favorite place to pick up the podcast and type in Your Money with David Hayes, and hopefully it'll just show up, populate right into the feed, which is the 2025 Final Drive, What You Need to Know to Win. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, I don't know that I'll have a ton of time to talk about this, but so I've got a bunch of topics here. Let's talk about rolling money over or not rolling it over from an IRA to 401k, and when does it make sense to roll it back into a 401k from an IRA? And I had a little bit of stuff on inherited accounts and things, so we're just going to go with it, and whatever I can fit in, I fit in. This is Your Money with David Hayes. You know, I was talking to Rod about this, how Americans have had their inflation aha moment. I think I'm going to talk about that because I saw this in the Wall Street Journal. And after the fastest climb in inflation in the last four decades became real, the old lower price was crossed out on the menu at a restaurant I was at in southern Indiana with a new price next to it. And it was like $8 to like $9 something. So things are happening. And I just made a comment to the waitress. I said, oh, you know, prices are going up. And she just says with her, she shrugged her shoulders and said, inflation. I go, yeah, I get it. So inflation has been that fixture in the headlines for months. Of course, prices have jumped on food, utilities, energy. Many people are hitting and saying, oh no, I can't do that any longer. The sticker shock is there. We see it at the pump as well. I'm notorious for only putting like $20 in my gas tank, and my wife doesn't understand it, and it doesn't make any sense. But like today, I was in a massive rush. And my gas light comes on, and I've been running on my gas light all day, and finally it says 0 miles to empty, get gas immediately, whatever. So I drive up the road. I jump out. It was kind of cold. I didn't have my jacket, and I put $20 in and jumped back in. And it gave me two little dots on my gas register, which two little dots, I don't even know. That's not even a quarter of a tank, right? It's just kind of like almost there. So, yeah, things are there. And we've had the fastest climb in prices since 1982. And the Fed, of course, is jumping in to say we're going to raise rates. We're going to fight this thing. But a lot of people have heard it in the media for a while. You know, the oh, inflation's coming. It's here. But when it really starts to affect people is when they decide, I'm not going to do that any longer. Remember, 70% of GDP is based on consumer spending. And when the University of Michigan comes out with a consumer confidence report that falls to the lowest level in a decade last month, that's not good, because if people don't have confidence, they're not going to spend money. And I've always said that even if a person has no money in the stock market, when the market's just being slaughtered, and that's what they hear about, it brings down the morale, it brings down the confidence of folks. And I really believe a lot of them are having this aha moment. So if it is long lasting, those are the things that will naturally grind the economy to a halt. You don't have to have the Fed, you know, cranking rates up dramatically. But the combination of those two things, and whether it happens quickly or not. Now, folks have gotten raises. A lot of them have gotten nice raises. But is it enough to overcome the rise in cost of things that they'd buy and do every day? I was getting some carry out at a Japanese steakhouse this past week, and the lady, I stopped in, I was leaving a Boys and Girls Club board meeting, I stopped in to get it, and my wife called it in. I walk in, and they're like, $82. Okay, so I give them my credit card, she swipes it for $82. I put a tip on, and I stand there and wait. Well, of course, I know people there, I always know people there, so I stop and talk to a few people, and catching up, and I'm like, man, my food was supposed to be done like 15 minutes ago. I better go back to the front. Still wasn't ready. And another lady comes in, and she says, I said something like, well, I'm still waiting for mine. And how long did they say it would be for you? And she said, oh, like 30 minutes. I said, well, they told me 25, and I've been here 45. And she goes, God, I hope not. I just spent $90 on food, and I'm feeding six. And I said, well, if it makes you feel any better, I just spent $82 to feed two. Oh, well, we actually used to do that and say, but now we split our meals. And I'm like, that's pretty good. So I get home and I tell my wife, we were both full, right? Halfway through our meal, we're completely full. And instead of, you know, like sharing a meal, we stick it all in the fridge. And then we hope at some point Will come along or some other hungry 20-something and eat it, because rarely do we go back to those leftovers a day or two later and say, oh, I really would like to eat that hibachi again. Rarely does that happen. So guess what happens? It goes in the trash. So things like that are happening. You know, people are just cutting back. Still, they're still going to the Japanese steakhouse, but they're cutting back right on what they're spending based on the fact that things have cost substantially more. So if this continues, those are the things that will slow down the economy along with the Fed. And as Rod pointed out, in a couple years, who knows, the Fed may be back going the other direction with rates. We'll have to see. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, I'll talk briefly about this retirement rollover stuff, more so just to tee you up and get you thinking about a couple things. When I come back, it's Your Money with David Hayes. All right, I have all kinds of things on this, but I decided to pick one. So we always talk about rolling money over to your IRA, which is normally the best thing to do. Once it gets to an IRA, you have more investment flexibility, you have more options when it comes to conversions, you have qualified charitable distributions, all kinds of things you can do in an IRA. You can treat all your IRAs as one and be very selective in where you take your money from. Well, but sometimes it makes sense to roll money back into a 401k. And the biggest reason is this. If you're attempting to do a Roth contribution and you make too much money, and that's part of this episode that I have, the one coming out on Monday with the podcast, you can do a backdoor Roth. You put money into a non-deductible IRA, anyone can do that, and you then can convert to a Roth IRA, which anyone can convert to a Roth, regardless of income, regardless of net worth, regardless of anything. Everyone has that option, non-deductible, as long as you have earnings and a conversion. Well, if you have other IRAs, the IRS looks at that as just a partial conversion on all of your IRAs. So you get into this pro rata rule, which means you end up paying tax on that conversion when you intended not to. So in that case, it makes sense to consider rolling money from your IRAs back into your existing 401k to eliminate having all these IRAs, and then it gives you the opportunity to do Roth conversions. Now, your plan will have to accept the roll in, which many of them do. And the other question is, if I have a Roth IRA, it doesn't matter. It's only the traditional IRA. So you don't have to worry about, you know, whether I roll in Roth money or not. I wouldn't do that. Just leave the Roth IRA out because you've already satisfied all kinds of those rules, like the five-year rule or whatever. But just traditional IRA money is all I'm talking about. Roll it back in the plan. Now you can do your backdoor Roth, and this is especially for people that make too much money to do a traditional Roth contribution. So that's just one little thing of maybe 10 things that I had written down, but that's why I'm doing the podcast, because I can dig a little deeper into things and not have to, you know, get into worry about breaks and worry about boredom and worry about, because we're talking about 8 to 14 minutes of just bang. We're going to talk about this today and we're going to move on. All right, let's take a break. We'll come back, wrap up the show. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back. Just a couple minutes left in the program. I didn't talk about our wonderful sponsors of the news of the week, and that is, our, of course, our friends Lance Like at the Like Law Group. Give yourself and your family the peace of mind that comes with proper estate planning. Call Lance at the Like Law Group, 812-323-8300. Should be a major priority. Unrivaled Electric, they want to be your electrician like they are mine. They specialize in generators and solar arrays. They're veteran-owned, so give them a call at 812-361-3604. And finally, I was going to jump on last night but did not have time. Kenny Bland Auctions, they are your full-service auction service. Visit them online at kennyblandauctions.com. They have weekly auctions. It's so much fun to get on there, see what's for sale. Goofy stuff, cool stuff. Unique stuff. You get on there, it's so much fun to just snoop around. I bought really something silly the other day. It was $1.50, and I don't know why, but I just said, oh, sure, I'll bid on that. And then it's like, okay, now what do I do with this? So that's my point. But we've bought some cool rings. I bought some silver there. I mean, it's fun to get on there. And of course, you're just a few miles away from where it originates from. I hope everyone enjoyed the show. I want to say this, that I haven't had many guests on this year. We had tons of guests last year. Why? Because no one, and 2020 and 21, because not people weren't out doing stuff. They weren't out doing their conferences. A lot of my guys, my go-tos, are out on the big speaking tours now. It's been a little more difficult to nail them down. But I promise that I will start to bring up great guests again, crank them back up. I'm going to be in Kansas City next month with the Ed Slott Elite IRA Advisor Group. A lot of great minds out there that I've tapped into over the years. So look forward to, the next quarter, and maybe even after that, we're going to bring on more outside voices so you're not just hearing mine all the time. Hey, I hope you have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you again next week, everyone. Goodbye. The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.